The 140 or so Americans who got out of Rwanda yesterday are landing in Kenya this morning. The first plane load is now down in Nairobi. They're safe, but they left behind a bloodbath in the capital city of Kigali. BBC correspondent Lindsay Hilsum is there.
I've seen some of the most terrible things today that I've ever seen. It's been absolutely horrific. I think in some ways maybe the worst thing I saw was a woman who came into the hospital carrying her baby and the baby's leg had been severed. There are people just lying around the hospital in a desperate state. Just going into the casualty ward, you have to step over people with the most terrible wounds and the floor is just encrusted with blood.
The BBC's Lindsay Hilsum. Fighting also is reported now in the next door African nation of Burundi, which has an identical ethnic mix to Rwanda. The animals from Gorillas in the Mist are among the possible victims of all this. Their caretakers have had to flee their sanctuary in the mountains of Rwanda. And Rob Hilsenroth of the Morris Animal Foundation in Englewood, Colorado, says the gorillas are very much at risk.
The poaching that's done in there for these animals is done using snares. And the gorillas get their hands and feet caught in these snares. And it can lead to gangrene and, of course, to death of the gorilla.
One other breaking story this morning. Today's Washington Post is reporting the White House now acknowledges that a powerful friend of Hillary Rodham Clinton's placed most of her cattle futures trades back in the late 70s. Brokers are supposed to take orders only from the investor on accounts like Mrs. Clinton's. You're listening to ABC News.
Hi, David Garner again, president of Connect Long Distance. If you think the big boys' international rates are so high that calling out of this country is just out of this world, then I've got a global challenge for you. Go grab an old long-distance bill, one with lots of overseas calls. Those calls you made to Japan, Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Australia? Are you paying only 66 cents a minute? I didn't think so. Are you paying just 68 cents to Korea and New Zealand? Connect customers do. And if you call 1-800-LONG-DISTANCE, you will too. Every minute of every hour of every day. Guaranteed. Call them dollars, drachmas, pesetas, or pounds. There's nothing petty about the cash Connect will save you. So call 1-800-LONG-DISTANCE. We'll do an instant price comparison for you right over the phone, and you'll agree. Connect's low international rates are going to put you on top of the world. So call us at 1-800-LONG-DISTANCE, and from there, we'll all wave bye-bye to the big boys.
We've been hearing about Chicago's post office problems, the worst in the nation. Two internal memos reported in this morning's Chicago Tribune place most of the blame on management breakdowns in the Postal Service. They say workers at five area post offices are poorly supervised, proper workplace procedures are ignored, and equipment receives no maintenance. New work for the old Philadelphia Naval Yard. A group of five Pennsylvania congressmen cut a deal in Moscow this morning. ABC's Jennifer Glass has the story.
The Philadelphia shipyard is scheduled to close as a government facility in 1995. The five congressmen came here to make a deal with the Russians, so not all 5,000 workers will be laid off. What they came up with is an agreement to try and bring Russian ships to Philadelphia to be scrapped for their metal. Congressman Kurt Weldon led the delegation.
It's not going to save the shipyard in itself, but it gives the shipyard a crutch so that other work can be pursued, and that this can be kind of a filler.
If the deal goes through, it could bring as many as 1,500 jobs to Philadelphia. Jennifer Glass, ABC News, Moscow.
Nobody on the ground was hurt when two small planes collided in a fireball and fell onto a factory in Farmingdale, New York. All four aboard the planes died. Roger Clinton wants to add another title to his list. So far, he's first brother, newlywed, and part-time singer. Now he tells a lecture audience at Kentucky's Morehead State University he plans to become a college student and enroll somewhere in California. This is ABC News.
If you wear contact lenses, 800-800-LENS, a revolutionary mail-order service, will save you up to 50% on your replacement lenses. We offer fast, convenient delivery of all major brands of contacts right to your front door at savings of up to 50%. Call now for AccuViews and other disposables, just $21 a box. If your prescription is current, 800-800-LENS will keep you from seeing double and paying double. Call 1-800-800-LENS.
For the ABC Information Network, I'm John Belmont. From ABC News, World News This Week. I'm Lou Adler, ABC News, New York. Listen.
I shall have to keep busy or I'll fall apart, that I know, and I think I'll manage to do that.
The U.S. Embassy is urging Americans to stay in their homes, to keep their heads down, hoping that the waves of violence will subside long enough for the international community to mount an overall evacuation of all foreigners.
I have 8,000 active patients in my practice right now.
8,000?
I have over 8,000.
When was the last time you slept?
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's world news.
Hi, David Garner again, president of Connect Long Distance. If you think the big boys' international rates are so high that calling out of this country is just out of this world, then I've got a global challenge for you. Go grab an old long-distance bill, one with lots of overseas calls. Those calls you made to Japan, Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Australia. Are you paying only 66 cents a minute? I didn't think so. Are you paying just 68 cents to Korea and New Zealand? Connect customers do. And if you call 1-800-LONG-DISTANCE, you will too. Every minute of every hour of every day. Guaranteed. Call them dollars, drachmas, pesetas, or pounds. There's nothing petty about the cash Connect will save you. So call 1-800-LONG-DISTANCE. We'll do an instant price comparison for you right over the phone, and you'll agree. Connect's low international rates are going to put you on top of the world. So call us at 1-800-LONG-DISTANCE, and from there, we'll all wave bye-bye to the big boys.
It's not easy to step aside, but I know what the numbers are, and it's time.
With those words, 85-year-old Harry Blackmun, the justice considered to be the most liberal on the U.S. Supreme Court, announced that he was hanging up his black robe. Blackmun had been appointed by Richard Nixon in 1970. Then considered a conservative, he wrote the majority opinion for the court's controversial decision on abortion just 3 years later.
I've been under attack for 20 years on Roe against Wade. I suppose I'll carry it to my grave. I'd like to think that I've written in other areas of the law some rather significant decisions, but one gets tagged with one, and there it is.
As ABC law correspondent Tim O'Brien tells us, Blackmun indeed was involved in many other significant rulings.
Blackmun was generally sensitive to civil rights and stood for separation of church and state. He was often tough on criminal defendants, but may have completed his ideological evolution earlier this year when he came out against capital punishment.
Blackmun's retirement gives President Clinton a chance to make his second appointment to the High Court.
The shoes are large. The role that he has filled on this court is terribly important. I will attempt to appoint someone of genuine stature and largeness of ability and spirit to the court. I will try to do it in a timely fashion.
As the president's list of prospective nominees is being drawn and refined, speculation grows on whom he or she might be. Professor Lawrence Marshall of the Northwestern University Law School believes the nominee will neither be a conservative nor a liberal.
I think the president will seek to appoint a moderate for two reasons. First, to avoid any Senate battle at this time when his political capital is so precious. And secondly, because the president himself is far from a liberal.
Among the names being mentioned, Interior Secretary Bruce Babbitt, who so far respectfully declines.
I have said to the president, I want to do my job as your Secretary of the Interior. And I've said to him, I very much want to stay put right where I am for exactly the reasons I've explained.
Senate Majority Leader George Mitchell would like to think about it should he get a chance.
I will consider it as I will consider any other option that's presented to me.
Meantime, Justice Blackmun looks to his own future.
I shall have to keep busy or I'll fall apart, that I know, and I think I'll manage to do that.
As President Clinton ponders his choice for Blackmun's replacement, he's got several other matters to think about. Among them, the announcement by Japan's prime minister that he's resigning. Morihiro Hosokawa becomes the fourth of Japan's last five leaders to quit because of a scandal. This one involved personal finances. The U.S. and Japan had been trying to work out trade agreements. So how does Hosokawa's resignation affect that?
That means trade talks with the U.S. would become suspended, and it's a question as to whether or not the United States would use this as a reason to put off prosecuting U.S. interests with trade relationships with Japan, or whether they would continue to push for a stronger yen and a weaker dollar, even though there's no government in Japan.
At least that's how Carl Weinberg sees it. He's the chief economist with an organization called High Frequency Economics. President Clinton says he looks forward to working with Hosokawa's successor. Mr. Clinton also has to be concerned with recent events in the Middle East. 8 people died and another 40 were injured when a Palestinian man blew up his car beside a passenger bus in the northern Israeli town of Afula. The militant Islamic group Hamas says the suicide bomber was one of its sympathizers. Denunciations came from both sides involved in the current peace talks between Israel and the PLO. Zakari Alaga is a PLO leader in Gaza.
It only delays the peace process, and only by peace we can put an end to such acts.
Yossi Beilin, Israel's deputy foreign minister, agrees that violence is not the way to solve the region's problems.
We know very well that we are only going to punish ourselves if, as a result of those activities, we are going to stop the negotiations.
Nonetheless, ABC's Peter Alan Frost says that Israel has moved to secure the occupied areas.
Israeli security authorities have closed off the entire West Bank and Gaza Strip to prevent any Arabs from those areas from crossing into Israel. Israel expects a continuation of terrorist attacks, and the closure, expected to last until after Israel's Independence Day next week, is part of increased security measures in the country. Several areas of the West Bank are still under limited curfews.
The bombing and other attacks on Israelis are seen as retaliation for the shooting of Muslim worshippers at a mosque in Hebron in February. There's also been unrest in the Central African country of Rwanda, following the deaths of the presidents of Rwanda and the neighboring country of Burundi. The two leaders were flying into Rwanda's capital of Kigali when their plane was hit by gunfire. The deaths led to vicious street battles among rival tribes as each sought to gain control of Kigali. BBC correspondent Mark Doyle talked to one of the tribal leaders.
The first vice president of the RPF, Patrick Mazimhaka, said there was fighting in various places, but that it was most intense on the main road from the rebel north to the capital. The sound of artillery explosions could be heard about 20 kilometers south at RPF headquarters. He said the civil war in Rwanda had resumed. The military option had been forced on the RPF because of the chaos in the capital.
More than 200 Americans are in Rwanda, many of them missionaries and other aid workers. Car caravans have started moving them out. Several countries, including the U.S., have moved troops into neighboring areas in the event they're needed to get their citizens out of Rwanda. In the Balkans, the Serb terror campaign against Muslims and Croats in Bosnia continues. ABC's Tony Bertley says that new tales of murder have begun to emerge from the city of Prijedor.
Conditions are so appalling. It's only now that since these murders have come to light that we're beginning to realize what has been going on. All attention has been focused elsewhere in Bosnia, but now it's come back to, quite abruptly in a terrible way, that the Muslims and the Croats are being subjected to a terror campaign there. And they're forcing to submit to all kinds of atrocious acts, which is making their lives so unbearable that they're prepared to leave their homes that they've lived in all their lives with just basically the clothes they wear on their backs and perhaps a carrier bag full of some possessions that they can carry.
There's been no move by the UN or NATO to respond with force. And the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General John Shalikashvili, says there isn't likely to be anytime soon.
The solution to what is going on in Bosnia, I think, everyone has said from the very beginning, is to reach agreement at the negotiating table and not to try to revert back to something we have rejected from the very beginning, is to find a solution on a battleground.
The Serbs seem to realize that force is not in the cards. And as a result, they continue their game of brinkmanship with the U.S. and its allies. Along with those foreign developments on his mind, President Clinton hit the road to push for one of his chief domestic goals, health care reform. Among his stops, Montgomery County, North Carolina, where he heard Dr. Deborah Roberts tell him that she is one of only 3 general practitioners in the area.
I have 8,000 active patients in my practice right now.
8,000?
I have over 8,000.
When was the last time you slept?
Well, actually, I did sleep last night. Somebody else was on. I never heard a call.
From North Carolina, the president went to Topeka, Kansas, where he held a roundtable discussion with some local folks. One small businessman, David Hoffman, told him how his insurance costs jumped after 4 of his employees had heart bypass surgery.
There was a correlation between when we saw insurance premiums increase with those events. In some cases, we were faced with 20, 30% increases. It drove us to the point where over the last decade, we've had to shop for insurance 3 times and each time switch to a new carrier, a new structure, and try something different to keep those premiums in some sort of control.
President Clinton told Hoffman his health plan would help by forming insurance purchasing pools.
The insurance business would, in effect, have to make money the way grocery stores do, a little bit of money on a lot of people. instead of a sizable amount of money on a few people, where you can't afford the risk of having even one person who's real sick, or the policy becomes unprofitable. This is key. I mean, we cannot do this and be fair to small business and really do it unless we can go to community rating and all of us can share these risks.
In Fairway, Kansas, the president held a town hall meeting that was carried by several local TV stations. During that session, he fielded a question from Herman Cain, the CEO of Godfather Pizza. Cain doesn't like the idea of being forced to provide health care coverage for his employees, says it would be too costly.
My question is quite simply, if I'm forced to do this, what will I tell those people whose jobs I will have to eliminate?
Here's how the president answered.
You would add about 1.5% to the total cost of doing business. Would that really cause you to lay a lot of people off if all your competitors had to do it too? Only if people stopped eating out.
Nearly everyone agrees that some kind of reform is needed. And Mr. Clinton closed out the meeting by telling his audience,
please urge your members of Congress, if not necessarily to agree with me on every detail, but to seize this moment to do something profoundly important for the American people and guarantee health security to all of us and to our children.
Congressman Roy Roland has taken the president up on that. The Democrat from Georgia, a former family doctor, is out campaigning for his own health plan. ABC's John Cochran says it's different from the president's.
The big difference between Congressman Roland's plan and the president's plan is that Bill Clinton would provide universal coverage. Congressman Roland says the country can't afford that, but he would like to build some community health centers around the country to provide care for people who can pay at least a little of their health care coverage.
Roland figures his plan stands a chance of being considered since the president has forced Congress to focus on health care reform. The French were focusing on AIDS this past Thursday.
Yesterday, you came to let me out.
Elton John was only one of the performers who appeared on a nationwide telethon. Doctors and people with HIV appeared with the stars to discuss the disease. You couldn't see anything else on French TV that night. All seven national networks carried the show. In Britain, some unsettling news about how effective the drug AZT is in preventing the development of AIDS in HIV-positive patients who show no signs of the disease.
The bottom line of the study is the same, and that is these results do not encourage the early use of AZT in patients that are well with HIV infection.
The conclusions reached by Professor Ian Weller are disputed by Wellcome PLC, the company that makes AZT. There was disturbing news from a conference on ovarian cancer being held at the National Institutes of Health. It came from Dr. Carolyn Hendricks.
The problem is that the current blood test and ultrasound tests do a much better job of detecting benign disease than ovarian cancer.
ABC's John Bascom has more.
If there's a message for women from the panel of cancer experts, it is this. Don't rely too much on the current screening techniques to find ovarian cancer. The blood test and the sonogram that usually are used can cause more fear than is necessary and more surgery than is necessary because, quite simply, these tests are flawed.
Come as you are, as you were, as I want you.
In rock music, Kurt Cobain was acknowledged as the founder of the so-called grunge sound. Highly popular among the 20-somethings and a sound that's infiltrated the fashion industry through the grunge look, replete with its flannel shirts, torn jeans, and work boots. Cobain's group Nirvana put the grunge sound at the top of the music charts, but its success may have weighed too heavily on Kurt Cobain himself. He developed a heroin and alcohol dependency, and on Friday he shot and killed himself at his home in Seattle. Kurt Cobain was 28. You rode a seesaw this past week if you own stocks and bonds. The markets bounced up and down, chiefly because of uncertainty about interest rates. Greg Smith of Prudential Securities thinks the roller coaster effect will be around for a few weeks.
May and June will really be the test. I would suspect we'll have a rally. Typically, after a big sell-off like this, we have a rally followed by another move down. What technicians would call a test of the lows.
Jack Albertine, who runs his own economic forecasting firm, sees no real reason for the current market gyrations.
The economy is fundamentally in solid shape. Corporate earnings are strong. Productivity is good. Inflation is really not a threat. And so I think probably the stock market will remain in reasonable shape.
The outlook for the job market looks pretty good, if Dun and Bradstreet are right. Joseph Duncan is the firm's chief economist.
Our 1994 survey of job outlook suggests that about 3 million new jobs will be created in 1994. That's up from 2 million jobs last year. So it indicates that the recent report of strong job growth is likely to be repeated later this year with a significant number of new jobs being created in the economy.
Duncan says 73% of those new jobs will be created by small businesses. Nothing small about the strike the Teamsters announced.
At 12:01 Wednesday morning, more than 75,000 Teamsters who work for 22 major companies in the freight industry are going on strike.
The union truckers earn $17 an hour, but as one striker said,
money is not an issue. It's a job security thing is the issue with us. And we've got a major problem in this country today, and it's this. We've got too much part-time help. Show me one place anymore that's asking for full-time help with full-time benefits.
Big strikes usually mean inconveniences for consumers, but the trucking industry's Robert Young says,
I'm not sure the consumer's going to notice anything right away. I think that the companies that normally ship by our truck lines are going to be looking around for other ways to move the freight, and it's unfortunate because some of that business won't come back when the strike is over.
Some talks are getting underway, but no quick end to the Teamster strike seems apparent. Some good news out of California with the announcement that the Santa Monica Freeway will reopen this coming Tuesday, 74 days ahead of schedule. The freeway had been heavily damaged during January's earthquake. Governor Pete Wilson had taken a carrot-and-stick approach with the people involved in the reconstruction, and it paid off.
We incorporated into the contract incentives so that if the contractor finished ahead of schedule, they would get a bonus for every day that they were early. If they went beyond the scheduled deadline for completion, the agreed-upon deadline, they would pay a penalty for each day that they were late in the same amount as the bonus.
More than 300,000 vehicles use the Santa Monica Freeway every day. Housing police in Chicago have been searching that city's public housing projects without warrants in an effort to cut down on crime. But as ABC's Aaron Hayes tells us, a U.S. District Court judge is banning that.
The judge said that broad gun sweeps in Chicago public housing simply are not constitutional if there's no search warrant. What he said is police cannot go barging into people's apartments in public housing developments without a search warrant. However, the judge did leave the door open for some sweeps under emergency conditions. He said if there's an armed gang shooting outside and they run inside the building, police can go door to door.
The gun sweeps had the support of residents like Beverly Dorsey.
To stop CHA from finally doing that job, which is protecting the residents of housing, it's just ludicrous. The gangbangers and the drug dealers have won the day. Our children have lost.
The suit to stop the warrantless searches had been brought by the American Civil Liberties Union. In Los Angeles, the retrial of one of the two Menendez brothers has taken another turn, and we hear about it from ABC's Judy Muller.
Eric Menendez, the younger of two brothers charged with killing their parents, has won a strategic legal battle. A superior court judge placed Eric's lawyer, Leslie Abramson, on the county payroll so that she can continue to represent him. The Menendez estate has run out of money to pay Abramson her hefty legal fee, so she requested the court appointment. The judge agreed only when she said she'd work for $125,000 a year. That's about what it would cost taxpayers to pay a public defender. Brother Lyle, meanwhile, will be represented by two public defenders who are expected to take months to prepare for a retrial. Lyle's first lawyer resigned to spend more time with her family. Judy Muller, ABC News, Los Angeles.
Terror for the flight crew of a Federal Express DC-10 when a fellow employee suddenly attacked them with a hammer not long after taking off from the airport in Memphis. As three members of the crew fought to subdue their attacker, the pilot threw the plane into a series of rolls and dives to keep the assailant off balance and turned back toward the airport where Jerry McMichael was watching the approach.
The captain did a remarkable job landing that aircraft the way he did, and all are lucky that they did not crash.
The pilot was released from the hospital after treatment, but the two other crewmen and the attacker remain hospitalized. Reportedly, the assailant was facing disciplinary action at Federal Express, and that may have led to his attack. He's to be charged when he leaves the hospital.
Hey!
Hillary Rodham Clinton threw out the first ball and joined Cub announcer Harry Carey in baseball's traditional anthem to inaugurate the start of the new season in Chicago. Meanwhile, the president was doing the honors in Cleveland. The season is only a week old, and we've already seen a no-hitter as Kent Merker of the Braves blanked the Dodgers 6-0. The national pastime is coming under fire from anti-smoking forces, such as the American Medical Association. The AMA's Dr. William Jacot explains why.
We would like Major League Baseball in all of their big league parks to ban smoking and
billboard advertising within, in other words, get rid of tobacco products.
As awareness about the hazards of smoking keeps increasing, so does awareness about the hazards of drinking and driving. Just listen to the president of Mothers Against Drunk Driving, Becky Brown.
When MAD was founded in 1980, 28,000 Americans were killed in alcohol-related crashes. That was 55% of all highway fatalities. A preliminary report just released by the Transportation Department indicates that by 1993, impaired driving deaths dropped by a dramatic 37% to an all-time low of 17,500.
The survey also shows an increase in the selection of a designated driver among people who plan to drink and drive. Lots of partying following Arkansas' 76-72 victory over Duke in the NCAA championship game in Charlotte, North Carolina. President Clinton was there to root his home state Razorbacks to victory.
This was a championship the way it ought to be. A great game. I'm really proud of it.
College basketball may be all over for the season, but the pros won't wrap up their championship until June. A familiar face fades to black when World News This Week continues in a moment.
October 14th, 1987. A small child has been lost in an abandoned well in Midland, Texas.
Baby Jessica, they've gotten close enough.
Minutes become hours. The entire country waits and hopes and prays.
The rescue team is finally...
No country comes to the aid of a child the way we do. Yet today, millions of children are being lost. Lost in an education system unable to prepare them for today's competitive world. But the real tragedy is that a lot of these children will never live up to their promise. The world is changing. America is changing. And more schools have to change to keep up. Imagine if the same effort that went into saving that child in Texas went into keeping the promise that every child in America gets the best education so that every child can have a future. Call 1-800-96-PROMISE for information on changing the schools in your community. A message from the Education Excellence Partnership and the Ad Council.
For the last 15 years, Charles Kuralt has been a fixture of Sunday mornings on CBS TV, providing his viewers with a mix of news and features delivered in much the way they would thumb through a Sunday newspaper. Kuralt is retiring after more than 30 years with CBS. His final show was on Easter Sunday, and he bid his audience farewell in that characteristic style of his.
There is a rhyme by Clarence Day which says what I want to say. Farewell, my friends, farewell and hail. I'm off to seek the Holy Grail. I cannot tell you why. Remember, please, when I am gone, 'twas aspiration led me on. Tiddly, widdly, toodaloo, all I want is to stay with you. But here I go. Goodbye.
And the people and stories that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Gil Longin. I'm Lou Adler, ABC News, New York.
More Americans get their news from ABC News than from any other source.